Hello, thanks for listening. It's another episode of Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. What a week, where we break down the top political headlines in a conversational news roundup with Scott Lay, and I'm Jabron Maciel. Do you have a subject you'd like our take on? Reach out and let us know. We're more than happy to tackle the issues that are important to you. ScottLay@gmail.com or Jabron@sacktowntalks.com. You also know where to find us on Twitter. Thanks again for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and share us with a friend. Okay, let's get started. And here, let's pause for the cause. This episode of Sacktown Talks by the Nooner is brought to you by the Nooner's Classified Ads. Here is just an example of what you'll find on aroundthecapital.com/classifieds.
Exactly.
Is that right? That's aroundthecapital.com/classifieds.
So on June 26th, Pete Conady's organizing the annual Capital Veteran of the Year luncheon.
SEIU UHW seeks a regional political organizer for Los Angeles and San Francisco. They're also looking for political coordinators for one political coordinator that can be based in Oakland or Sacramento. That looks like it's going to be a NorCal Bay Area political coordinator.
And now I cut off the next one. Somebody's looking in Oakland
for a policy.
It's a social justice organization, and they're looking for a policy government affairs associate/counsel.
Yeah, if they're based in Oakland, they're probably a social justice org.
Yeah,
associate director government relations. That's what you just said. Deputy director of legislation regulatory affairs, CEA level A. Do you remember?
That's for the Gambling Control Commission.
Nice. Go have some fun at the Gambling Control Commission. Meet some new friends.
Burton and Brains have moved. So that's the firm with John Burton, partner Angie Tate, longtime associate of Burton, and Monique Vieira. So they've moved offices in Sacramento. You can find out the address online.
Very cool. And Political Data Incorporated. Paul Mitchell now holds.
Brilliant.
Is a brilliant guy. Yeah. Brilliant guy.
Have you watched Harold and Maude yet?
No.
Paul,
we're sorry. But, you know, you guys missed this, actually. It was an off-camera moment, but he actually bent a spoon backwards with just his mind. that fucking guy is so smart. But I think he's fundamentally wrong in a lot of his analysis, but I won't take away from him. He's really smart. This is the guy you want to get trained from. This is the guy you want to get your political data training from. I mean, there is no higher standard in the industry, I think, than Paul Mitchell. You heard that right. It's another episode of Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. I'm the host you love to hate, Jabron Maciel, here with Scott
Lay.
All day, Scott Lay.
Oh, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
How you doing, brother? That's what she said, but you know, I'm not going to say that. Wouldn't be prudent.
Well, it's too late now.
Oh, that's right. We don't edit this stuff. That's why we put it up on video, so like people know that we just... You know, he tells me even if I have to go to the bathroom, you know, I'm kind of like stuck in the chair for the entire hour.
No, so. You know what? If you do need to use the restroom, I can just kind of riff on something for a few minutes if that's need be. And to our listeners, prospective members, lobbyists, hoping to come on, but maybe a little bit nervous about the format. Let me just say this: you'll be okay if you just don't say anything stupid.
Right.
Right. And then and, you know,
unlike us,
but. Yeah, unlike me, who's kind of permanently twisted and deranged. No, but you know, this is actually a hard...
I just drink water when you get that way.
Yeah. this is kind of a hard format to be really taken out of context in and maligned, I think. Yeah. Because it's not like a quote is written down about you. It's like in order to like get to the bad part that somebody said or the quote-unquote bad part,
right.
You'd have to like go to the video or go to the audio and start listening. And you can't help but listen to more. And then, and so, you know, then people can like put it in context or whatever. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like, you know, President Trump had like 5 tweets this morning about the Mueller report. And part of it is he called it bullshit. And let me just say that, like, Wolf Blitzer was so excited, like, because he's on CNN, he can say bullshit. And it was like we bleeped out as opposed to like when Stephen Colbert will have to say, like, BS or something. Or
So you can use the bad word if it's in.
If you're cable.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It goes back to FCC only covers the airwaves in terms of censorship.
Huh.
So since they're not on the airwaves now, technically, very little is now. But
wait, so am I to understand that like cable could put on like hardcore porn if they wanted to? That's not right. There's got to be some over.
If you think back to Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. You know, that's Netflix. But yeah, that's raunchy. But you have similar shows like that where you get frontal nudity and that sort of thing. And, you know, Veep would be a lot less funny if it wasn't on HBO.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And we'd be a lot less funny if we had to censor ourselves.
Right,
too.
Right.
Although, you know, maybe we're not that
funny. Anybody wants to pay us to actually go on the radio, we'll do it, you know, and we'll censor ourselves, or you could beep us. We don't care.
I cannot be held down.
No.
I'm just kidding. Hey, so should we stop and do some signposting here?
Yeah,
let's do that. Why did you want to do California Love by Tupac?
Because I just walked through the rose garden at the Capitol. It is all the roses are blooming right now. Now, you and I are probably going to sneeze through this entire podcast, yeah. But it is just glorious out there right now. And I'm feeling some California love. Maybe it's because the legislature's been gone. But no offense, my friends.
No, you know what? It really is. It really is gorgeous outside.
Yeah,
it really is gorgeous outside. We're putting the boat back in the water tomorrow, probably. Nice. Yeah, I just hope the river isn't full of debris.
Yeah,
you know,
it's and then pretty cold too.
Hey, you know, don't get in the water if you can't hang. Right. But yeah, you know, it's just the nicest cruise up Garden Highway in the water, and then you can come down after after sunset and the Tower Bridge.
Yeah,
you know, in the evening is like it's so pretty. Lots to talk about this week. The Allspice Reap burglary. Hey, we're with you. Scott bought a bunch of spices yesterday, and he's wearing the Allspice shirt.
I got like the espresso rub for some meat, and I'm representing today with the shirt.
Yeah.
So it was great to see, just quickly on this one, we don't need to spend too much time on it, but it was great to see so many members of the Capitol community come out purposely Thursday, to shop at their first day reopened. They were only closed for one day. After they were burglarized, an idiot threw a rock through the front door and smashed the cash register. And there was no money in the cash register. And the idiot thief didn't realize that a jar of saffron is worth far more than could fit in a cash register. I probably shouldn't say that, but I doubt too many thieves are listening to Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. So.
You know, just the ones in the legislature.
Okay, that's legal.
Boom. Legal. Gavin's first 100 days on what's ahead. 100 days is a stupid tradition. Oh, sorry, that's my own note. It is a stupid tradition, but not to diminish Governor Newsom, but I think it's just a stupid marker. Especially when it takes 30 days to get a bill heard.
Right.
That's just stupid.
Then we're going to talk about the current state budget situation as we watch the April tax revenues come in. And then we're going to talk about Senate Bill 50 and the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. Not my words.
Is that the Negro Removal Bill?
Negro Removal. That's what the AIDS. That's a quote, a 1963 quote.
Urban renewal is Negro removal.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
And the AIDS Healthcare Foundation is using it to attack Senator Wiener's density housing bill, the revitalized or reintroduction of last session's bill. It's now SB 50. It's going to be heard on next Wednesday. We'll talk more about that one.
What else do we have here coming in at number six?
The Supreme Court of the United States is going to listen to arguments on Tuesday in the citizenship question for the United States Census, and we'll get to that.
And at number seven, federal campaign finance, seven new Dems performing well.
And then Devin Nunes. He's cashing in on his lawsuit against Twitter. It's a stupid lawsuit from the legal perspective, but he's raking in the dough. We'll talk about that.
Quickly, does Twitter have any incentive to just settle and pay him off?
No, I don't think so.
Cool. Nine, Omar Navarro gave himself a raise from $4,000 to $5,000 in March in his rematch with Maxine Waters. State candidates cannot pay themselves, but it's allowed under FCC fees. You can, really?
You can pay yourself a salary. You can't pay childcare costs. This was literally an issue last year. A woman said, wait, men can pay themselves salaries, but women can't pay the cost of childcare.
Why don't women just pay themselves salaries?
Well, there's a good point. But if you're actually in a...
We should be looking to narrow the funny business, not increase the funny business.
Right. It's a stupid bill. If you're in a competitive race, you wouldn't be paying yourself a salary. So a woman in a competitive race... Because it looks stupid.
Okay.
I'm going to give you campaign contributions so you can run for Congress.
As opposed to, I'm going to give you campaign contributions so you can go to South by Southwest after you've told the rest of the state of California that they can't go?
Okay, yeah, there's something like that. Yeah, okay. We still don't have a list of who all went to. They did go on the state's dime, but they did go.
Members of the legislature, you should just write and tell me if you went, because I'm going to look it up and find out anyways. So just write in and tell me.
Then our friend Duncan Hunter down in East San Diego County, he crossed the border, or it appeared so, and we'll get to why that's particularly interesting in his case.
What a massive douchebag. Adam Schiff of Burbank raised $1.87 million in Q1 after spending $1.05 million. He still had $5.54 million on hand. Powerful Adam Schiff.
He is the Schiff.
Yeah, you know, it's a talk show circuit, man. You can't put on Meet the Press without Adam Schiff's big mug.
And he doesn't come across as an asshole unless you live at 1600 Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no,
you know. Some of our other friends, and I do consider them friends, that are now in Congress and appear
their
on
job
nights,
is to be,
and they are, they're like these, you know, bulldogs and, you know, going like crazy and getting the tweets.
Yeah.
Adam's just always calm and collected.
Yeah, you know, he's cool. He is cool about it. He's just like, hey, this is out of the norm. We're going to investigate. We're going to get to the bottom of this. But, you know, he seems like a really level-headed guy. He's always like, and I go back to this fighter saying, it's not personal.
Yeah.
He's like, this is our job.
So the gentleman from Burbank actually has the most cash on hand of any incumbent member of Congress, including like Nancy Pelosi. Like Nancy Pelosi's got like $1.5 million. He's sitting on $5.5 million. Now Nancy raises money for the DCCC.
If Nancy's holding on to too much, it's a demerit on her, right? Because she's supposed to be funneling it out.
Right. She has a joint fundraising committee.
So for folks listening who are lay people or don't necessarily, you know, live in the political world, and congratulations to you for not. Think of the legislature as a mafia of mutual protection. And
I'm drinking water because I'm thirsty, not because I'm trying to duck the conversation.
Yeah, but, the members appoint like a head boss, and their job is to protect the incumbent. They just circle the wagons, and their job is to protect the most vulnerable ones, right? So the speaker, you know, the members in safe districts are supposed to kick money up to the speaker, because that's kind of seen as excess money for the caucus, and the speaker redirects it to vulnerable members, mm-hmm. right? That's always kind of been the formula. I think it's actually a particularly interesting formula in a place like the state assembly, where it's like, man, how many Dems is enough?
And you can't do what they do with like the DCCC in Washington, D.C. under California's campaign finance laws. Mm-hmm. You have to do the laundromat process of sending it through county Democratic central committees and the state Democratic Party. The caucus itself doesn't have its own fundraising arm, essentially.
You mean you have to launder the money before you can put it in the real system?
Yeah.
Dude, the mafia analogy just keeps going. It's not a good look.
It's voter approved. I think we've talked about this. It's voter approved campaign finance schema, which was written by the two parties to protect them.
Well, it's sort of legislature written, legislature pitched, legislature funded, and then you put it in, you identify the lowest turnout election that you can put this thing in, and then you throw as much money as you can at it, and then you say, voter approved, look, I mean, it's
all in the game.
It's all in the game. It's also borderline corruption. Pelosi throws shade at AOC. Her wing of the Democratic caucus is like five people.
That was a little bit much. We talk about you're a big speaker. You're supposed to like not diss members of your own caucus.
That's why I wanted. This is why I wanted to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Because you know the formula is. I don't want to get us totally sidetracked, but I think this is worth discussion. I think it's interesting to lay folks. You know, the idea is we protect our own. We circle the wagons. So going back to the original idea that if Nancy Pelosi or, you know, Speaker Pelosi was holding on to too much money, it'd be a demerit on her because she's supposed to be a funnel for that cash to vulnerable members and to pet causes and stuff like that, right? So by definition, she really can't hold on to too much money or people would be like, hey, why are you the speaker? But in this case, like the question that the speakership always, like the existential question that speakership always brought up to me is, of what worth is a member of your caucus who does not share your values and your views and your beliefs and your priorities, right? Mm-hmm. And so if they just call themselves a Democrat, mm-hmm. does that make them worthy of protection? Right. And so I think with AOC, you have that question on the opposite scale of the spectrum that you usually see it in. It's usually you kind of get
usually the mods.
It's usually the mods, right?
That are out of line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's usually the mods who have some like conservative leanings on some issues where people are like, why even protect them? Why, you know? But in this case, it's AOC on the far left.
Right. And right? I actually see a strategy perhaps that Pelosi was doing it to satisfy her other members of her caucus, those with higher seniority,
that like a public flogging, you think?
That are pissed off that AOC is on TV all the time.
Fuck them.
You know, and Steny Hoyer's like, wait a minute, I'm number two in the House.
Who the fuck is Steny Hoyer? Wait, I'm gonna have to look this turtle
Maryland.
Up. Steny Hoyer?
House member from Maryland.
You know why you're not on TV? It's because your name is Steny Hoyer. Because you're a white guy with a toupee that looks like the Monopoly Man. Who hasn't said one charismatic thing, or you'd be on TV. You know why AOC is on TV? It's because she's fearless.
I thought you were going to say because she's hot.
Well, she's hot, too. I mean, I'm not going to back away from it. She is hot. But no, she's fearless. You know, I mean, like, she's...
Well, and Pelosi's fearless, too.
Yeah, Pelosi. That's why she's on TV. Yeah. You know, Jimmy Gomez, my old boss, is doing such a... He's fearless, you know? I like this saying they say.
We won't start naming names of who can't appear on TV.
Yeah, you know. But, you know, AOC is often wrong, but never in doubt. She's awesome, man. And you know what? Being beautiful does help you get on TV.
Yeah.
There's a significant underrepresentation of fat, ugly people on television.
Yeah.
Right? So, but no, you know, I also think
Jerry Nadler had the bariatric surgery.
Oh.
You know, Jerry Sadler's, Sadler is the, am I getting his name right? Nadler. Nadler is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and he used to be like, at least twice the size as he is now. He's not a small guy now.
Yeah.
And he had the bariatric surgery.
Oh, good for him.
And
good
for lost him. Like half the weight. And I mean, he used to, like, you'd be watching a TV program and you're like, this guy's going to die tonight. It was really bad.
You know, I see some of these lobbyists, man. I see some of these lobbyists in the, you know, when like July hits or like early August hits and they got to walk over from like I Street or something. Oh my God, dude. I'm like, guys, you need some shade and some water, you know, make sure you got the baby aspirin in your pocket, you know?
Okay. Let's get back to the top of our rundown before we just like,
no, but
piss off everybody.
Yeah, no, you know what though? I mean, honestly, for, let me just say this in an attempt to redeem myself. She is attractive. And that helps you be on TV. Just look at who headlines, you know, cable television news, right? Whether that's right or wrong, I think to say that it's true is enough, right? And I think the broader point that I don't want to. A lot of times when we joke around, the broader point can get lost, and the substance of the point can get lost. Is that, you know, if you're the 24-hour media cycle, I think is not a institution that values moderate, nuanced points of view. Okay, so AOC comes in, you know, AOC comes in ready to burn the house down. People are like, yeah, put her on TV. You know, I mean, it's clickbait, but on television.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
Okay, here, let's should we get on track here?
So, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the burglary of Allspicery, because, you know, we've talked on this program before about, you know, how do we, since we both live in the vicinity of the Capitol, you closer than I do, and there's this concern about the safety, particularly for women that are walking to their cars at night during the winter. It's dark. And you have a situation like the Allspicery burglary that happens immediately across the street from the Capitol. You would think is what would be one of the most secure places in Sacramento.
Yeah. No, it
Sacramento's got varying levels of security in different neighborhoods. And it does get really dark, and you know that's a concern, and we want to talk. I think we're going to have Councilmember Steve Hansen on, who represents downtown, including Allspicery, and I know he knew about the burglary and was helping them out, knew about what we were trying to do to drum up business for them. But you know, this is a real problem, and the legislature's got to take responsibility for it.
You know, for folks listening, Allspicery is a spice. They sell spices and tea. They're right next door to the Capitol. They're across the street from the Capitol. It's like literally Chicory is where the lobbyists and the legislators meet. And right next door, you get your spice, you get your saffron fix, right? And it's like this little hole in the wall.
Young, independent women owners.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm not a spice guy. I'm a salt and pepper guy, so I've never been in there.
They've got really good salts, really good flavored salts.
I might have to go there.
Yeah.
Okay. But and they someone had thrown a you know, you didn't want to open up the discussion, but someone threw a scooter through it, right?
No, it was a rock.
It was a rock.
It wasn't it a scooter. It looked like it. No, because somebody had knocked down all the jump scooters in front of it. But they when I went in to buy my stuff yesterday, they showed me the rock. It was this polished rock.
That's good. You know, let me tell you. At first I was sort of against the scooters.
Yeah.
And then I rode one.
Yeah.
And I was like,
they're popular.
I rode the scooter with my two headphones in. I'm like, I felt like I was like mounted on my steed.
Scooters and the bikes are so popular. As I'm walking over just now, you know, just dozens, you know, people with the weather at 83 degrees. I mean, when it was raining, you know, back January,
not so
popular. But right now, everybody's out. They got like their sundresses on and the women are wearing. No.
With regards to allspicery, homelessness, mental illness, I mean, it's an interesting discussion, right? Because we don't know that it was a homeless or a mentally ill person that did that.
No.
We're just assuming.
No, I wouldn't assume.
Okay.
But, to be honest, the 24-hour homeless, mentally ill are not as, I mean, are usually too incapacitated to pull off something like
happen,
which of breaking through with a rock, clearing the glass out to be able to walk in then picking up a register and smashing it.
What I was going to say was that that was my assumption. It was. And if you for folks that don't live in Sacramento, K Street at night is a dystopian science fiction scene. It's rough, man. It's really, really rough. And
unless it's a game night, you're on the West End.
Yeah.
You know, down near the arena. Or you're right near the convention center. Yeah, and there's a big convention going on.
You know, I remember
Mid-K
is a rough you know, town. I can't help but think about when all the liars on the city council told us that the arena was gonna revitalize downtown. I guess we're still waiting for that to happen, huh? You know. The one thing that really bothers me about the homeless situation is that, you know, the police, you know, going back to my field representative days, the police sort of public information officers, they refer to the homeless issues caused in neighborhoods as quality of life issues. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's too soft a term for it, honestly. The constant chronic homeless situation and the fear that it strikes into people's hearts, I think is a fundamental breaking of our social contract. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a right to dignity, I think, in this society. You have a right to whatever way of life that you choose, so long as it doesn't interfere in other people's, you know, in with what other people want to do. But I mean, I can tell you that, you know, I'm a 200-pound man. I'm a martial arts expert. I feel it. But even sometimes I am just like, holy hell, man, I got to, you know, my wife will not walk down K Street. You know, she will not walk down with her children down K Street. You know, and there's a guy that, you know, because we live up here on the 14th floor, the Capitol Center, this tower over here, mm-hmm. this office building, it has a planter in the front. There's a homeless guy who comes in around 10 a.m. every morning and takes a shit in it. Mm. You know?
Does he flush?
Oh. No, he doesn't flush. But, you know, I mean, he comes in with his newspaper. It's no big deal to him, at least. there's a woman who soils herself on our doorsteps pretty much every day, and my heart goes out to them, but you can't help everybody. And at some point you feel like, man, you know, I work so, it's not like I work hard and I deserve more. I think it's more like somewhere along the line, it makes me feel like someone here isn't holding on to their end of the social contract, you know? And it's not necessarily like a blame that I can assign to the homeless people, but I mean, there's a real failure on the part of the municipal government, a real failure on the part of the state government. And, you know, we're running.
But there are no easy solutions. And we don't plan on talking about this today because we're going to have Councilmember Hansen on the next couple of weeks. And we want to get a little bit more information. The city council's talking about on Tuesday, but there's a proposal to convert a single room occupancy hotel.
That's not
going to
do anything. That's not
a very low income, you know, hotel that provides long term housing for people. The proposal is that those long term residents would be moved out somewhere with relocation assistance, whatever that means, in order to create a triage homeless shelter with services.
Yeah.
And it's a that's a hot issue, and I want to get more information before I speak very unintelligently on it. But no matter what you do, you know, it's not like the Fab 40s are going to say, oh, come build a nice homeless camp.
Yeah, no, I mean, there needs to be radical solutions proposed. Yeah. I'm ready to hear draconian measures. I'm fucking sick of it. Yeah. And my wife is scared. Okay, this is not a child-friendly place. Okay, and I think that at some point you have to say that, like, the citizens who really support the municipal government deserve better.
And there's a group of, you know, of new businesses. Now, Allspicery has been here for 3 years. They just celebrated their anniversary. But you have Darna Restaurant I've talked about, Mediterranean Place. The owner of Darna is very interested in, you know, filling those vacancies on K Street so that there's enough
businesses. Wasn't the arena supposed to do all that?
Right. So there's enough businesses so that it could operate until 10 o'clock at night, not just from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Yeah.
We have a new bookstore coming in. The owner of that bookstore is similarly interested. And these are small independent businesses. And that's what we need to encourage.
No, you know what? I'm not going down there until they clean out the riffraff.
Well, yeah.
I'm not hanging out
there until they clean out
the riffraff.
Yeah,
it's not fine at lunchtime. It's not fine at lunchtime.
Oh, it's fine at lunchtime. I eat there all the time. Okay.
Well, not everyone's as rough and ready as you.
Yeah.
No, seriously. Okay,
it's because I wore the jujitsu shirt last week.
Before we start getting personal here, and before people, you know. Okay. By the way, folks, this is an emotional topic. If you disagree with me, just keep it in the gunny sack and move on.
And
you don't have to send me nasty messages.
Yeah, we don't mind messages.
No,
make it rational.
Yeah, make it substantive.
And keep it to two paragraphs, please.
Gavin's 100 days and what's ahead? What did he do in the first 100 days?
It's actually a lot. I mean, he came
in. No, I didn't mean like that.
Came in, he introduced a budget that was widely recognized as prudent, mm-hmm. with not overspending with ongoing programs like we did in the late 90s. I won't refer to which governor that was. He was recalled. I like Gray and Sharon, but it happened. And so, like, Gavin's learned lessons from then. He also learned lessons from the prudence of Jerry Brown. He tapped Eleni Kounoulakis, the lieutenant governor, to be the international trade representative for California. She was the ambassador to Hungary and a businesswoman. That's the first time in any of our individual lifetimes, not just political lifetimes, any of our individual lifetimes, where a governor is using a lieutenant governor.
Yeah, that's cool. And that is cool.
That was really smart. Most of it, though, was his ability to cogently address issues. We saw it in the budget presentation, and then we saw it in the PG&E bankruptcy, where, you know, he did the budget presentation, he came out and he did an hour-long presentation, and then he answered press questions for an hour. I mean, like,
yeah,
I couldn't be sitting in there. I just sit at home because I had to go to the bathroom. You know, you know me, I like 1 hour.
He's just going until they drop.
And he was in no notes, no staff. Whereas previous governors, the last four, actually.
Jerry answered questions himself.
Well, no, but it would be a half an hour presentation, a few minutes of questions, and then hand it over to the director of finance.
Okay.
The other thing that Gavin has done is he's brought on very strong and independent women to be his inner circle.
I kind of feel
his top three staff, director of finance, chief of staff, and cabinet secretary are all strong women.
That's not necessarily different than what Jerry Brown did.
But his chief of staff was essentially his wife. You know, and she's great. And Gus Brown is great. She's a businesswoman of her own, right?
He also had Nancy McFadden. Yeah.
But he had
Martha, Graciela, Kim Craig.
But in totality, I think it's 60% of the top positions are filled by women under Gavin, which I think is,
a new bar. I just don't want to act like it's, maybe it's like slightly more.
Yeah.
But it's not new. It's not new in California. But, like Governor Brown, I felt like was a guy that sought to empower women. I mean, Nancy McFadden ran so much, right?
Yeah.
Rest in peace. She's, you know.
But the other thing about his staff that he brought on are people that are not Me Too people, not in the Me Too political sense, but
yes,
they are
people
that, right. They're willing to push back on him, and he's willing to listen. You know, something about Gavin is, you know, he talks about his dyslexia And so he really doesn't do well reading off of notes.
Yeah.
He sits there and he studies stuff. Now, Jerry Brown was very well read, but he was like reading, you know, Latin books and stuff. Whereas Gavin just pores over the material. And a lot of people thought he was going to be an empty suit with nice hair. And he's proven wrong.
You know, let that be the let that be a hallmark of the sort of discrimination that attractive people face. You kind of want to assume that they're substance.
Jabron and I have that problem all the time. they must have no substance.
They must have no. Yeah. Well, you know, people always said that. People would say that about my wife because she's very pretty.
Yes.
And she's like, "What do you do? I'm a stem cell scientist." I'm like, "Oh, fuck. Okay." Yeah. One thing the theme that I kind of have for Gavin Newsom in my head is like Jerry Brown 2.0 in a lot of ways. And I think he even said that in one of his, it was an interview or a budget roundtable. He said, you know, we're not doing ongoing commitments with one-time funds. I really like how Jerry Brown cut that out. Yeah. And I really admire what he did from a budget, a budget perspective. We're prudent. We have a rainy day fund. We're ready for a recession. And you know, the reason I reflect on that is because when Jerry Brown kind of on his second term in those 8 years had kind of turned the fiscal ship around, everyone, you know, there was some whispering like, man, he's pretty well positioned to run for president, isn't he? You know, might he run again? I mean, right. this is a good look. You know, look what he restored fiscal stability to California, and he either really deserved some time off. Or two, just feels like too old. But he's not doing that. But I feel like...
Gavin will eventually, I think.
No, he will.
But he's going to stay here for 8 years.
This is what I'm saying, though, is that he's setting himself up to run for president.
Right.
You know, with the thing in Guatemala, or where did he go? Guatemala?
El Salvador.
With the thing in El Salvador, sorry. With the socially progressive, fiscally... I'm not going to say conservative, but fiscally, you know, sound.
Prudent.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is sort of like the look that people were saying with Jerry Brown. It's like, oh, this is a really good platform actually to run in California on. The social issues are right. The fiscal stewardship is right. And, you know, and look at this, he can really talk.
Right.
You know, so I'm kind of seeing for me, and maybe, you know, it's easy to predict things when there's nothing on the line for you, you know, but that's what I'm seeing in this whole thing.
So I did, with Mike Trujillo, a political consultant from Los Angeles, he and I were guests on a news show on Wednesday that aired in Southern California. And the host asked about the death penalty moratorium. And Mike answered first and he said, well, you know, Gavin's position is the Pope's position, which was well placed. And then when it turned to me, I said, well, how many executions did Jerry Brown preside over the last 8 years? Zero. Okay. There weren't any. Had any gone to the lethal injection chamber, he likely would have commuted their sentences to something different. So we've had a de facto, there was, I think, believe one execution at Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm. So we've had a moratorium. Gavin just like
had the balls to make it official.
Yeah, that this is, you know, this is a moral issue. And instead of hiding under
it's not listening to the voters, a moral issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean...
Do we want to be a pure democracy?
You know, I don't know. I feel like if the voters made it clear... What's interesting?
If voters made it clear, we would have no taxes and we would spend all kinds of money. You know, and so it takes political leaders to say, okay, you can have cuts to education or you can increase taxes.
I don't feel like this is one of those like governance issues. This is a moral issue that the voters waited on.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I feel like if we were to have the, you know, I think if anything, voters would want swifter executions, which I understand is has its own issues. But you know, what's interesting is like the East Area Rapist case. Mm-hmm. They're seeking the death penalty,
right.
You know, so this deserves a better discussion than the sort of fly than we're sort right. of having right now, because I've not looked into it because this wasn't on our outline. But I guess just to say, you know, and some victims of crime have gone on and said, you know, you ripped these wounds right open. You know,
and you know how I feel about victims deciding.
Yeah, they don't deserve shit. I get it.
Not at all. I think they deserve compensation. They, you know.
But don't listen.
I don't think that they should be the ones that determine sentences, whether it's the years or whether it's execution.
They're not determining sentences. If the execution has already been, if the gavel came down, if a judge's gavel came down, and said we're going to execute you, and then years later, and then years later, someone says right. no, we're not.
And if it was 30 years ago, you know how much has changed in the law medical knowledge related to execution in 30 years.
We should leave no stone unturned. Right. I totally agree, but. I feel like I would be able to support the death penalty thing a lot more if he had said, you know what, we're not doing this going forward, but for everyone who's been sentenced, we're going to resolve this.
I appreciate him coming out and saying this is my moral position.
Because it's your moral position, because you agree with him.
That's right. So I give him a B+. I give him an A- if I was, as I wrote, you know, as coming out of undergrad, I would give him an A-, but then grading got a lot harder in law school. Like, A's are impossible to get. So I have to, like, lower him down to a B+. But I think it was a pretty damn good 100 days. Yeah. Now, the next 100 are going to be, you know, the budget challenge.
Yeah, you know, politically, I can't identify anything that he's done wrong.
No, the high-speed rail was, the announcement was vague. I think he got out too quickly on that.
No one gives a shit about high-speed rail. No one actually cares.
Except for the farmers who aren't have that eminent domain, and now they have a choo-choo to nowhere running through their property, but that's not Gavin's fault.
And it's also not his it's also not a constituency he's terribly concerned about.
Right.
So when I said, like, I don't think he's done anything wrong politically, I mean, looking down the road, assuming a presidential run at some point, he's checking off the boxes of his constituencies. Right. From a policy perspective and from a priorities perspective, I think he probably should have gone down to El Salvador before he went to Tulare, or Colusa.
You're right. No, and that's right. The criticism I'm hearing in the Capitol is, you know, including from a lot of Democratic members and staff, they weren't crazy about El Salvador so early. You know, let's get our first budget put to bed.
Go to the Salton Sea.
And he is pushing, you know, for the clean water.
That's about virtue signaling in the Central Valley.
But he should, as Trujillo said Wednesday when we recorded that interview, you know, he needs to spend more time in the Inland Empire and more time in the Central Valley, the deep Central Valley.
Yeah, I worry that those are constituencies that he's just going to ignore. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see.
I don't think so. He's got to carry, if he wants to keep those super majorities in the legislature, he's got to be watching Senate District 14 with Melissa Hurtado. You know, some of those swing districts.
When was the last time the legislature used its supermajority?
Gas tax.
Yeah, okay, so you got one.
No, there were several. You
know, I don't know. Is he really concerned with the legislative supermajority? I don't think that's something he concerns.
Several things he wants requires a supermajority.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
You know. Well, we'll see. We got a lot of time with Gavin left.
April personal income tax update. By the way, we're at about a half an hour.
Wow. Okay. And I can talk for like an hour on this one. Well, just quickly, coming into the month of April. April is one of the biggest revenue months for the for California. And those of you listening to this last Monday, you know why it was such a big. Why it's such a big month, the personal income tax deadline. And coming into April, we were $2.2 billion below projections for the year because January was abysmal. Mm-hmm. Now, we were all kind of scratching our heads what was really going on there. And what's going on is, as a lot of people have been talking about, the withholding tables are completely screwed up under the new federal tax law.
What I heard was that really had nothing to do with the Trump thing. That it was just screwed up this year for some other reason.
It's a combination of the two. I talked to my dad's a tax preparer, and I talked to him about it. And you know, a lot of people had a surprise. And so, what happens when people when people owe money, they wait until the very last minute, and then they write a check.
Yeah,
I put a check to Uncle Sam in the mailbox on tax day. I hope it was postmarked. They don't put the little times on some of these mailboxes anymore. You know, they still always have the times.
Yeah.
The one right over across from the Capitol, no times on it.
You know what's funny is I shared this
in front of Chicory. Yeah.
You know what's funny is I shared this little meme on Twitter. And it said, like, the government's like, you owe us money. Mm. And they were like, how much? The response is, well, you have to, it's like, what? So I just pay what I want? Like, you have to get, no.
No, we know how much you owe.
How much you owe. And if you don't guess it right, you're going to go to prison. This whole system's broken. you know.
We've always had a, you know, a it's not a voluntary tax system, but it's a voluntary compliance tax system that relies on auditing. So we came in $2.2 billion below projections. And as of Wednesday, it looked like we were only up $300 million above projections for the current month, meaning we were still like $1.9 billion down for the year. And then yesterday and Wednesday were just huge days. And we are now $2.5 billion above projections in personal income tax just for the month of April. So we're now $300 million above the budget amounts included in the January proposed budget for the current year, which replicates in the budget year. So 1920, it begins July 1st. So we're $300 million above just on personal income tax, and then corporate tax revenues are now $500 million above projections for the month. So we're getting closer to $1 billion over the January projection. And the long and short of that means that when the governor proposes his May revision by to the budget by May 15th, he doesn't have to cut out $2.2 billion in one time and $2.3 billion in ongoing
money. No, he's actually up.
From the January budget.
Yeah.
He's modestly up. My guess is they just kind of call it even.
And they put in
they'll make policy changes, but, you know, having a little bit of gravy next year, some buffer, you know, he'd be fine with that. So just very good news, because people were expecting, you know, we're expecting a $4.5 billion hit. Cut in May revise.
So for folks listening, just quickly, and, you know, again, I'll put my field rep hat on, you know, this is back in 2012, 2011, and the cantankerous old Scrooges in the Mission Bay, you know, homeowners association, or a town center association or whatever, were like, why can't Jerry Brown get these projections right? You know, why can't he get these projections right? What's wrong? When I sit down with that stupid, tired old line, when I sit down with my checkbook at my kitchen table, you know, if you say that, you're a moron. But you know, what I said is like, listen, folks, you know, these projections are an average of earnings. Okay. And so we got about 100 people in this room. Could you guess what the total dollar figure of income is for this room?
Right.
Could you? Anyone want to take a guess? Do you know what, you know, do you have an average of what they make? And then can you budget based off that? And then maybe someone here is a contract worker and they made more. Maybe someone here got laid off. Maybe someone, you know, you probably couldn't do it for just this room. You know, and I would have some really bright people working on doing that for the entire state. Right. And they take into account, you know, what we made last year, economic trends. But I mean, this isn't
deductions, which change because we follow the feds on deductions. Yeah. So those all change.
So many things, right? So many things. So, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds to try, you know. So the May revise is, you know, you put your projection out and you put your budget out on January 1st, and that kind of lays out your policy priorities and your markers. But the real deal is the May revise after you get your income tax returns on April. In May, you revise your original set of priorities based on what you got. Now, the game is usually to say in January to project way less than you actually think you're going to get, so that you have to make less concessions with the legislature. And then in May, you're like, oh, I guess we got a whole bunch more. And then that's right. Kind of your gravy to play with. So much so that I think in, you know, some of the, like in 14 and 15, the legislature was kind of looking sideways at Jerry Brown, but like, come on, you're totally sandbagging these projections,
right?
You know? But now it's a good thing that the practice is actually, I think, a good thing, because here we go, like Gavin Newsom, you know, the Newsom administration, had they not done that, they'd be in real trouble right now.
Right.
You know, so
that would be very painful to get a budget together between May 15th and June 15th when the legislature has to finish it.
That's like $5 billion.
If you're cutting out $4.5 billion, you know, that would be very difficult. You know, now you let the legislature play around a little bit with what was put on the table in January.
Yeah. I think the key there is to give the kids a small sandbox to play in.
I'm not going to call them all kids. Some would take pride in that. You know?
Yeah. Hey, so SB 50, I think one of the most consequential, this policy.
Controversial. Controversial and consequential.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think this is one of the most consequential bills in the decade. You know, if we're really going to start looking at, you know, this goes back to the Gavin Newsom thing about, you know, starting to really take, you know, we've had a lot of carrots, and when do we take a stick for these local governments?
So Gavin proposed, you know, in January to tie the gas tax dollars to
compliance with
compliance with housing elements. So each local government has to
set aside area, right, like physical planning, land, right?
Right, yeah. And they're not in charge of building housing. That's the private sector. No,
they just have to allow it,
but they have to allow
and
it.
They don't even do that.
And there are cities that voters have approved measures that block almost any new development.
That's interesting. Yeah, is that a voter approved moral quandary?
It is, yeah. And I think you know. So I asked this question the other day. Did Gavin just put that on the table in January saying, we're going to tie your gas tax money to your housing element, not just to get attention of city council members, but to get those local news stories where voters are starting to say, wait a minute, maybe some of this NIMBY stuff we're doing is not so good. So the governor wants to incentivize more, more housing, more transit-oriented housing, like is envisioned in SB 50. Yeah. And now he's pushed back that tie of gas tax money to housing element until 2023.
Yeah. Okay, so get us back to the talking point. SB 50 is this policy proposal, and you tell me if I'm off track here, okay? Around sort of state-designated or whatever the designated transit, public transit corridors, whether it be bus lines, rail lines, connections to BART, exactly, things like that. Mm-hmm. The state is going to go in and supersede local planning ordinances and say, no, you can actually build way higher than you'd be able to. Because some of these neighborhoods have like height limits where nothing can be taller than the old church, right, or you don't want to interrupt the vista to the ocean, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of times those height ordinances and those planning restrictions have been used to keep out the least amongst us and to hoard the American dream, I think in a really negative way. I think when we talk about the social compact earlier, I think this is fundamental to the social compact, is you have to be willing to share the American dream. You have to not hoard all the opportunity for yourself. Whether this is the vehicle for it or not, I understand this is like, this would actually represent a massive transfer of wealth to the landowning class, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, hats off to Senator Wiener for at least having the political courage to start the conversation. And I mean, look at like the absolute hornet's nest that he's disrupted. Oh, yeah. So, Senator Wiener, if you want to come in and talk about this, I would really love to have you on. Again, I have mixed feelings about this bill, but I really applaud your efforts to do something about this issue. So
the bill is going to be up on Wednesday at Public Safety. Yeah, so okay. Wednesday in the Public Safety Committee, it's up as a special order at 9 a.m. in room 3191. That'll be a hot hearing. And the Los Angeles City Council came out against the bill last week.
Oh, yeah.
Unanimously so. Yeah. And they responded.
But who's their constituency? It's the landowner. Who's their constituency?
And
it's
and
the
who
NIMBY
stirred
class.
Them up? The good old AIDS Healthcare Foundation.
Really? They're that effective?
They are that. They sent out a mailer, and they are very effective. And they just happen to also be so. AIDS Healthcare Foundation. Some of you may recall
this is the Shady Foundation control. You were talking about last
time. Right. So rent control ballot measure last year they sponsored. They got their ass kicked. They spent $23.3 million of AIDS Healthcare Foundation money in order to defeat. In order to try and pass rent control. They got just killed on that. They also sponsored a prescription drug ballot initiative in 2016. They lost on that. But they now, this week, sent out a mailer that used a quote that basically said that this would lead to Negro removal from urban areas. It's an ugly ad. I linked to it in the Nooner today. And I encourage you to take a look at it.
So the what's too bad about it is that. Sorry, did I interrupt you? Sorry.
No. Well, I was going to just know. So AIDS Healthcare Foundation. Okay. So where do they get money to pay for these mailers? Where do they get $23.3 million for rent control or $5 million for prescription drug price?
Where do they get $400,000 for their executive director
Something
salary?
Like that. So they are an entrepreneurial foundation. They're not one that like goes out and has bike-a-thons and stuff. they run $1 billion a year online pharmacy that's international, operates in, I believe, 23 countries.
Oh, wow.
They also run a separate foundation that's connected that builds affordable housing. So they are landowners and landlords themselves.
Is everybody in the affordable housing arena kind of shady?
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
I will never say everybody, but I know enough people that have worked around that arena and worked in local government, and there's a lot of shady stuff.
There's a lot of funny money.
Yeah.
A lot of funny money. You know, there's like a, I'll stop there before I really, you know, but this deserves a substantive,
let's get Scott Wiener, yeah. Senator Wiener on from San Francisco.
What's really too bad about that mailer though. And I think this is like, almost like if we go back to the, you know, when I offended, your buddy with my talking point about, you know, psychotic medication seemed to be linked to shootings.
I've never met my buddy.
Okay, sorry.
I have 8,500 buddies on the Nooner list. Yeah. So,
but sorry, when I offended our listener, and I meant no malice, but I offended him with my talking point. Just I thought I was just pointing out that there's a link between psychotic medications and mass shootings, and I have we have the stats to prove it, right? But what's really too bad about it is that in the emotions that I stirred up in him, the substance of the conversation was lost.
Right.
You know, and I think that with this mailer that was sent out, it has this African American guy.
You know, it was actually his quote from 1963.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it just says Negro on it. You know, I mean, it's an emotional piece.
Oh yeah.
Right. It's meant to stir up all these emotions. And I think that you don't need to do that to have a substantive policy point about gentrification, about the removal of people of color from neighborhoods that will result in these massive, you know, kind of one size fits all land use planning decisions, right? You don't need to go there to have the actual conversations like, hey, you know, I think you're going to displace some people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can have a conversation about displacement without having to go there is all I'm trying to say.
Another thing that when they did the prescription, when AIDS Healthcare Foundation did the prescription drug initiative in 2016, it was what it said was state agencies couldn't pay more for prescription drugs than the Department of Veterans Affairs does, the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. Sounds good, right?
Yeah. Well, except that they get special pricing.
Well, AIDS Healthcare Foundation, they put in the drafting initiative that the one state programs, the state program that was being exempted from it was Medi-Cal programs, managed care Medi-Cal programs. So companies create, you know, they craft a managed care program specifically for Medi-Cal patients. What does AIDS Healthcare Foundation also do other than sell drugs? They run an HMO. Medi-Cal managed care HMO.
So they wrote higher. They wrote higher rates in for themselves.
Yeah,
these guys.
So
who is this turd?
It's Michael Weinstein is the executive director, and he's, you know, he's been throwing, you know, hand grenades all the time.
Okay. Hey, Michael, if you ever want to come on and defend yourself, you're welcome. I'd sure like to hear it. I'd like to hear your rationale for this stuff, man. Seriously, man. But, you know, we might be kind of mean to you on air, but we'd be very nice to you in person.
We always are.
That's a Sacramento promise.
So on Tuesday, the Supreme Court of the United States is going to finally hear the issue of whether the Department of Commerce acted appropriately in including a question about citizenship on the census forms in 2020. Now, for those that want to get into the details of this question, go back and listen to our episode with Paul Mitchell, because I think we had a really good conversation about the pros and cons of, well, the cons of a census question. Now, an interesting thing happened. So that the original lawsuit filed by New York State was a lead, and California is part of that. A whole bunch of states and cities and individuals are plaintiffs. The original lawsuit was that the Department of Commerce violated the Administrative Procedure Act in developing the question. So the Administrative Procedure Act is the federal law that says what agencies have to do
to ensure in consulting due process,
with folks and publishing the Federal Register, et cetera.
It's their way of ensuring due process.
Right. It's a procedural due process. Now,
what's interesting is that what's notably not in the lawsuit is the substance as to whether or not they get to ask the question.
That's not in the lawsuit. And so the lawsuit, so New York and all the other plaintiffs have won at the trial court and court of appeals level. Now it's at the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court said, we want you to address the substantive issue as well.
Well, yeah.
Because they want to, so the Constitution says that the census is an exact enumeration of the population, not regardless of age, regardless of citizenship. That's plain reading of the Constitution. So the question is, you know, can you piggyback on questions that are go beyond the actual enumeration of everybody that's in the United States at the time the census is taking, April 1st, 2020. I don't think that the question is necessarily an appropriate piggyback for the census, but then you have to ask the question of everything else that's asked in the census.
Yeah.
Race, income. The Census Bureau does a lot of other surveys. There's the American Community Survey.
If you're just gonna ask population, just count people. Don't ask all these other questions.
So it could open up the whole can of worms, which is just like, okay, well, plaintiffs, you don't want to have a citizenship question. Well, all these other demographic things that are used for allocation of federal funding, a whole bunch of different things. Yeah. It's fundamental to the Voting Rights Act. You need to know in each census block how many people of each race are living there under the Federal Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, so the Paul Mitchell and his buddies can get in there and fuck it up.
To address communities of interest. Seriously, you know?
Yeah.
So this could be a really interesting argument. I'm looking forward to reading it. When the audio comes out. But the transcript will be out within like 48 hours.
So. Yeah, you know, I think with... Man, that is really interesting. Like to me, I kind of see this as like the folks who are against that question being asked kind of shooting themselves in the foot because they're like accidentally going to open up this can of worms that they potentially don't want. And
I think that's why they didn't bring up the substantive issue and they only addressed the procedural issue.
Well, that's interesting.
SCOTUS enlarged it.
Would you call that a case of like judicial activism?
It's a little bit.
A little bit, right? They're going, I mean, yeah.
Within the Supreme Court can do whatever the hell the Supreme Court wants to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is somewhat unusual in Supreme Court behavior.
Well, I guess let me just say this is, you know, when you, there's no shopping, you know, there's no venue shopping when it comes to the Supreme Court. You get the court that you get, right? Yep. And I think that the liberal progressive intelligentsia needs to think twice before they take things to this court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not a place where your resistance talking points, this is not a place open to being persuaded through your channels, right? And so I think that they've really got to think twice. I mean, and this is just like one of the first shots across the bow. It's like, hey, we're actually going to open this up.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't know. What do they take on bolder and more meaningful action in the future and start? How, I guess what I'm saying is like, what other judicial norms are they ready to break?
You spent time in San Diego. This is like the Scout Grunion, that first little fish that's like coming in before the Grunion run in Southern California, where the little fish come and die on the beach and we scoop them up. You know, this is the first Grunion. It's like, we're going to see what the Supreme Court does on some of the more activist Trump initiatives. So I think the Supreme Court stays away from the substantive issue and just addresses the procedural issue.
Yeah.
But if they don't,
we can say that this is a new norm.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think Chief Justice John Roberts doesn't want to be seen as a rubber stamp for the Trump administration. He's very much against that, knowing his judicial personality. We also saw another case that may end up there just yesterday when the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the liberal Court of Appeals district that covers Alaska and then the west coast of California and Hawaii, held that California's sanctuary state laws were all constitutional, were all okay.
Yeah.
But the Trump administration sued California over three bills that were approved to provide to allow cities to establish sanctuary city type status.
Yeah.
And the Ninth Circuit, in an opinion, a three-judge opinion written by a George W. Bush appointee, said California is in its right to approve these three bills and kicked it back. It was really a preliminary injunction question, which part of preliminary injunction is a district court says, yes, the plaintiffs are likely to I'm sorry, the defendants in this case, so the state of California, is likely to prevail if this goes to full trial. So Ninth Circuit, so the preliminary injunction was challenged by the Trump administration at the Ninth Circuit. Ninth Circuit said the district court was right that California is likely to prevail, and they kicked it back to the district court. So we now kind of start the substantive process all over again if the Trump administration pursues this, which is unclear.
Why wouldn't they?
I don't know. I think they likely do, and they could ask for an en banc ruling, which means instead of the 3-judge panel, all sitting Ninth Circuit judges would hear the matter or would consider the matter. I think they just do it on brief and not oral arguments.
I feel like Trump, you know, I feel like Trump likes to pursue anything with immigration in it, whether good or bad, right? Outcome for him, for his
anything
position
against California, because California is suing him left and right.
No, I feel like this. I feel like this is just politics for him.
Yeah, Ben Christopher for Cal Matters had an article. I think it was today, so Friday, if anybody's looking it up, California has now sued in the first 18 Trump. Months, Trump more than Texas sued Obama. And that was a real high bar.
Okay.
So that issue, the sanctuary city issue from California, that's another one that could end up in the Supreme Court eventually.
Yeah. Okay. Here, moving on. Number 7, federal campaign finance.
We don't need to go over numbers. They were in the Nooner earlier this week. Everybody was wondering how the 7 new Democrats that were elected to Republican seats last year, how would they do in early fundraising? And frankly, many are hitting it out of the park. I mean, Josh Harder in the 10th district just south of here, who beat Jeff Denham, he raised $865,000 in the first quarter.
There's this here in the San Francisco Chronicle, who's raised more money than AOC, the Central Valley Democrat?
Josh Harder.
Where's his money coming from?
You know, I haven't.
How's he outraised AOC?
He's got a lot of these candidates or office holders, new members of Congress. It's direct appeals. They're small donor electronic giving, and a lot of it's recurrent giving. That signed up for $10 a month.
You know, it's
campaign.
So much. It's so much. Once you hit the button, it's so much. Like, I gave Yang $20 because I was excited about it, and then someone pointed out, it's like, this guy is promising to give you money, but first you got to give him money first.
Well, you know, and I don't give money, but I buy apparel. And so all of a sudden I become like I get 50 of these messages a day.
Yeah. Okay. So go to aroundthecapitol.com/Nooner if you want to follow the money.
Yeah. But we want to talk not just about those 7 Democrats who all did pretty well. Gil Cisneros in the 39th congressional district was somewhat disappointing, but he's also the $100 million lottery jackpot winner. So
is he really?
Yeah. That's how he got his money, and he and his wife created a foundation.
Wait, he won $100 million jackpot, and now he's in Congress?
Powerball, yeah.
Man.
He's a veteran. He's a guy of his own right. He's a businessman, a veteran.
Okay.
He doesn't need to worry about raising money like the others do.
Okay, here we go. Devin Nunes.
Nunez. So our good friend, the Republican from Tulare. So you may recall, I think, do we talk about it on here? He sued Twitter because Devin Nunes' mom had a Twitter account.
Yeah, and Devin Nunes' cow.
Devin Nunes' cow mullet I saw today. And some of these are just people renaming, you know.
Just having fun.
You can rename yourself without changing your Twitter handle. Yeah. But some of these are organic. And so he sued on the organic ones. He sued Twitter to say that they had a duty to pull it down with the allegation that some other Republicans have levied that hasn't been proven, may be the case, that they've been censored more than Democrats have.
Oh, now, I'm sure they have.
President Trump makes up for all that shit.
Have you seen, there's an episode of the Joe Rogan podcast with the CEO of Twitter.
Oh yeah, Jack Dorsey.
Jack Dorsey and his head of global development or his head of like global policy, and they were just going through when they would ban somebody.
Yeah,
and the actual policy criteria is totally aligned with the liberal, progressive, social justice warrior point of view. So I mean, it just makes like
and on that issue is you can regulate hate speech more than you can just regulate being an asshole.
Well, no, but there's no like what they're calling it hate speech if you have questions about transgender. They're calling it hate speech. They're calling it hate speech. If people who have, I totally accept transgender. Like if you want to be trans, like to the extent that I know your pronoun, I'll use it. Okay. But don't make me a criminal if I don't know your pronoun. Okay. Don't compel my speech. But if someone wants to, live with their chosen identity, I'm down to respect it. I think people deserve that dignity, but you can't compel speech out of others. And there's folks, on the right who have real questions about transgender and who like aren't there yet, and just for having their, I think, substantive talking points and their real questions about it, they're being labeled as hate speech.
There are a lot of liberals.
Look at where the headquarters are based. Look at who's the staff. You can't deny that there's a liberal.
But a lot of liberals, I see on my Facebook feed, a lot of liberals are being banned from Facebook. They're put in Facebook jail. It's like 2 weeks or, there's a set period of time like you need a cooling down, like a timeout. I'm a free speech absolutist. I was on a team for the National First Amendment moot court competition in law school. So I'm an absolutist on it. But anyway, the point is that, so Devin Nunes sued Twitter and then all of a sudden he's just raking in the dough through online donations, basically saying,
isn't this what I said before? This is good politics for him.
This is great politics for him.
So, I think what Twitter and YouTube and Facebook are doing wrong is, they say you get more, it's not the crime, it's the cover up that really winds up being damning. They should just be like, you know what? We are liberal. You know why? Because we're based in the San Francisco Peninsula area. We're full of liberal coders. This is just our company culture. And if you don't like it, go to another platform. Well, do you have any idea how many points they would win if they did? Because it's obviously the truth. They're not fooling anybody. And I think most of America is like, yeah, cool.
Well, and on that theory of
they should just be like, hey, this is who we are.
It's what happens after. And that's what you find in the Mueller report on the Trump administration. No collusion in part one. But part two was you probably obstructed justice through a lot of stupid things when you're trying to hide the fact that there was no collusion, or you're trying to make the case there was no collusion. And I mean, it was kind of it's exactly that. Like they should have just said, oh, we're going to open all our books. I'll let anybody talk to you, whatever. Don't have your staff going and saying, this is going to fucking bring my administration down. Whatever he said,
He just meant, I read the whole quote.
Yeah.
And he was just talking about paralyzing the administrative machine.
Yeah.
He wasn't admitting guilt. He was just talking about the paralysis.
Yeah, we did that over a blue dress in the 90s, if you remember. Yeah. You were in grade school at that time.
No, I remember. That's how I learned about the birds and the bees, honestly.
Yeah. So Nunes has $4.9 million on hand. So dude's doing okay. And it's a pretty safe Republican district.
Yeah. And let's go back to the blue dress. Who was the number one slut shamer in chief back then? Hillary Clinton, the progressive darling, huh? It's a weird thing, isn't it? Yeah. It's funny. We're doing the Republican douchebag corner here. Devin Nunes, douchebag.
They
make it so easy. Yeah, we were talking about this beforehand, too. It's like, man, what is it about Republican men that are just so prone to douchebaggery? Omar Navarro, next.
Kevin McCarthy's a great guy. Kevin hasn't done any dickhead things for a long time that I remember.
Okay, so here we go.
And he's number one in the caucus.
Navarro gave himself a raise from $4,000 to $5,000 in March.
Now, this is a guy who worked in a mobile phone store.
Yeah.
And so he
found a hustle.
He quit that job. He ran against Maxine Waters. He's built this huge list on Twitter.
And the money's coming in.
He's got 190,000 followers on Twitter.
Yeah, the money's coming in nationwide.
I think he bought a list on Twitter, and I've challenged him on that, and he says no. But he's got this huge list, these small donors. So, he gave himself, he says, I'm doing such a great job. So he was paying himself $4,000 a month.
He's just professionally running for office against this person.
In March, as my friend Rob Pyers from the Target book put out, he's like, Omar Navarro increased his salary from $4,000 to $5,000 in March. Omar then blocked Rob on Twitter. So,
Omar, you, sir, are a douchebag.
But state candidates can't do that. You can't pay yourself. Yeah. If you're a state candidate, only federal candidates can do that.
Good hustle, though. Good, you got to respect the hustle.
Look out, Doris Matsui. I'm coming for you.
You know what's so funny is I had mentally merged Devin Nunes and Duncan Hunter together.
I've done it all. Yeah, the time. Yeah,
you know why? Because they're both like Republican douchebags whose names start with a D. Yeah. And I'm just like, and they're just like both like Republican douchebag white dudes.
Devin's still allowed to serve on committees, whereas Duncan's not. Duncan's been stripped of all committee assignments.
Yeah,
which,
yeah, yeah.
Shit, what does he have to do?
I'm like, partying
again. That's like, can I run for office and win and then not have any committee assignments? That's a kind of good gig.
Hey, this gets
paid the same.
I mean, this goes back to what we were saying with what we were saying with Jim Wood. Being a member is whatever you make of it,
right?
You know, I mean, he's probably just partying. You know, you think he decided to be faithful to his wife and become a prudent spender overnight? Probably not. I think he's having some wild times at Ridgemont.
He did. Well, so he did. Hunter did. He only raised like $96,000 in the first quarter.
If you give money to Duncan Hunter after what came out about him, yeah, you're a fucking moron. That's crazy.
So he raised like $96,000 and he spent a little over $100,000. Most of it was on attorney's fees, for his own legal defense, not like attorney's fees for just filing the, as most, you know, committees do.
Yeah.
And then
that's like giving that's like giving money to the Matt DeBobne fund for battered women.
He didn't hit anybody. No allegations. No allegations. Hit anybody. Yeah.
Everything alleged. No
allegations that he dropped trowel.
Yeah.
But Hunter spent money on lawyers at the Capitol Hill Club, over $2,500. Capitol Hill Club is the Republican private club on Capitol Hill, and it's a great watering hole. And allegedly, pursuant to a Politico article a couple of years ago, allegedly his staff admitted that he often would disappear in the middle of the day, and then he'd come back and
drunk.
It'd be, yeah, a little bit fucked up.
Can we go back to the Matt DeBobne thing real quick, though?
Of course.
Okay. And of course, these are all allegations, although they were substantiated by the Assembly Rules Committee. But can you imagine how fucking scary that must be for a guy that size to drop trowel on you?
Cornered in a bathroom?
Yeah.
In a single stall bathroom? Yeah.
I mean, how big he is?
Yeah.
What are the chances that dude has a small dick? Zero. Have you shaken his hand? His hand is seriously the size of this thing. Like, his hand is like, there's literally.
Doesn't it usually work the opposite, though?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, man, if you could just imagine how fucking how fucking scary and intimidating. That's a dude that intimidates me, man. He's like 6'5" or something, man. I just can't imagine, like, how scary that must be. And I am sorry to anyone who didn't want to hear that conversation, but I my jaw drops at how fucking scary.
So Hunter, you know, lawyers, Capitol Hill Club, Alpine Tobacco Company. He spent thousands at. It's a cigar bar.
Yeah.
And Viejas Casino.
Just partying, man. He's just having a good for him, man. Good for, you know.
January, February, March. There's nothing going on.
Like, people are still going to send him $96,000 a quarter. My goodness.
Okay. So, but we have more news about Duncan Hunter. I mean, just because.
Oh yeah, that wasn't even the story. Oh my goodness, that wasn't even the story. Okay,
squirrel.
That wasn't the story. Is he fake crossed the border to try and prove how easy it is to cross the border. But the kicker is because he's on parole, he can't actually cross the border, so he had to fake it.
He was in Yuma, Arizona.
You can't make this shit up.
Because he had to like find where, you know.
These are our elected leaders.
Yeah. So he's standing in Yuma, Arizona. You got to look it up. I'll link to it. I didn't put it in noon. I'll put it in tomorrow. You have to look up the video. Roll Call has it. I'm sure it's on YouTube. But he says, I'm 15 meters away from the border. And he's talking about, you know, the number of people that are apprehended by ICE or CBP on a daily basis and how awful it is and how the county has declared a state of emergency. And then they cut it. So he said 15 meters. And then they rejoin the video and he's standing next to a fence.
Yeah.
And it is like, you know, like a fence you'd have around a cattle corral. And he points at it, he says, see, here is the fence. And he says, do you think I can get over this? And so he climbs over the fence. As Gibran said, if he had actually done that, he would have violated his parole and he'd be in the federal pokey where he probably belongs.
You know what's funny, though? You know what's really funny? I mean, so one, he represents parts of northern San Diego.
Right.
He's on parole, right? Isn't being in Yuma, Arizona a violation of his parole?
It should be.
You know, we got to get this. Seriously.
We need to talk to that federal judge.
Yeah, no, he needs an ankle monitor. He needs an ankle monitor. Who knows where this guy's gonna? Who knows where this guy's gonna go? He's a flat
if risk. Dr. Gregory House has to wear an ankle monitor on House, then so well, should I Congressman. Mean,
yeah, let's not overlook that. He wasn't supposed to be in Yuma, Arizona either. If the Republicans are sort of kind of like comedically inept and stupid and corrupt, the Democrats really take it to a new level. Here we go. Adam Schiff coming in at $5.54 million on hand. Powerful Adam Schiff, making it rain. What's your takeaway from this?
He's really hoping that Kamala is president, vice president, or attorney general, because he has the biggest cash on hand, or largest amount of cash on hand of any incumbent member of Congress. And so if Kamala wins the presidency, the vice presidency, or is appointed attorney general, I think she'd be a top choice for that position under, say, a Biden administration.
She opens up the seat.
She opens up the seat. Gavin Newsom would appoint somebody who would then have to turn around and run. So this would be if she joined administration, that'd be 2021. And that would open up the seat. Gavin would have to appoint or get to appoint, and the person would have to turn around and run in 2022. So from the guy, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Gavin if that opens up to appoint another woman or a person of color. But he also has to look at...
If he does want to appoint a woman, I would suggest Tony Atkins.
Yeah. Yeah. But raising the kind of money for a U.S. Senate bid, unless you're independently wealthy, raising that kind of money, it's very difficult. Because remember, federal campaign finance rules are much stricter than state rules, and you can't transfer money from a state account to a federal account.
Yeah.
So I think Adam is just super well positioned to get that appointment and be prepared to turn around and run.
Yeah, but then you're replacing a African American woman with a white male.
Right.
I don't see what were we talking about him?
Federal prosecutor, total vetted, and he's known across the country and could easily, double up on his campaign account.
I think there's no shortage of people in California that can raise that kind of money.
Granted, I know less about the system than you. Look at the actual.
I think whoever he appoints is going to wind up raising the money. I guess that's all I would say.
It would to get a net of $5 million, raising money is one thing.
Yeah.
The cost of raising money is another. So you have to look at the net amount. And so he starts off with $5.5 million in the bank.
Let me put it to you another way. What are the chances of whoever he appoints not being reelected? I would say close to zero.
I don't know. I think there are enough ambitious people that would jump in and run, at least to get in the top two.
Okay.
And who knows? I mean, 2022, that's when Gavin's up for reelection. So he would have to think, that would have to be part of the calculus also. So I don't know.
It's a very interesting talking point, because either way, this seems to signal the sort of meteoric rise of Kamala Harris in the Democratic Party. I mean, this is like when Conor McGregor came into the UFC and 3 years later, he like retired on a pile of cash. I mean, she was who was she just a couple of years ago?
Well, a couple of years ago, she was attorney general.
No, but I mean,
six years ago, she was attorney general.
She's California attorney.
10 years ago, she was a San Francisco district attorney.
What I'm saying is that she is now one of the top 10 most prominent people in the United States of America. That's crazy.
Right.
I mean, what fucking good
and
job.
She's still,
good
and she's
job,
still a
man.
Long shot
yeah.
for president.
Yeah.
No, but I think she's got it for one of those other two positions.
But if a Democrat winds up being... what I'm saying though is that if a Democrat winds up winning the White House, she's going to extract something out of this thing.
Yeah,
she's going to, and this is back to.
And like, I think the only thing she would take,
she's going
to
pull
other
something
than
out
vice.
Of this
I
thing.
Mean, yeah. Obviously, she would accept a vice presidential invite to be on the ticket, but I think the only other one she would take and leave the California Senate position would be Attorney General.
Yeah,
because then she could come back.
That's all I'm trying
governor,
to. That's all I'm trying to highlight is that she's pulling something out of this hat.
Yeah, and I have no idea what Adams, kind of. Personal ambitions are, he's not on the trajectory to be speaker. He's just, I don't see the
I think the caucus is
going
to want someone from California
the white guy.
Again.
They're not going to want another California person for a couple of generations. And a white guy is going to be less compelling than other members of the caucus.
Yeah.
And that's fair. I mean, We've had it for a long time.
Okay, here we go. The Mueller report. Do you have any thoughts on this before?
Well, we talked about it already. I mean, the gist of it was no collusion. Yeah, I read that collusion on Twitter every flipping day. I think it was a pinned tweet, right?
Yeah.
But there was some obstruction of justice issues. And that's what the Democrats in the House are going to be going after. And they're just going to try and make the president's life as miserable as possible, delay his agenda as they focus on this.
The only thing that I'll say about this is that I think the Democrats are starting to look increasingly out of touch. I'll use a martial arts and a prize fighting metaphor because that's kind of all I have to go back on. But it's also what I think is interesting. Okay. Oftentimes you'll have these like controversial fights, you know. One of the latest controversial fights was Gennady Golovkin versus Canelo. You know, Gennady probably, in my view, in my book, he won the fight, but he wasn't judged to be the fight. Mm-hmm. How do you judge the winner of a fight? It's a very vague and kind of, you know, it can go either way a lot of times, especially if it's a close fight. But, you know, a lot of people said Gennady won the fight. But at the end of the match, what do you know? Canelo's hand was raised, not Gennady's. Mm. And that's all that people remember. Nothing else mattered. The controversy, the fact that Gennady probably landed more blows, probably did more damage, that's all in the history books. That's not truly remembered. The controversy is just washed away by time. Mm-hmm. The only thing that people respect in America is if you won or if you lost. Mm-hmm. And that's just competitive sports generally, you know? And so like fighters' stocks rise and fall with whether they won or they lost, right. You know? And the voices that are calling injustice and blah, 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 just become fainter and fainter and fainter, you know, over time, as the rest of the world just simply needs to move on, right? And I worry that...
But see, the Democrats
don't want to move on. Yeah.
They don't want to move on. No. I mean, there's nothing substantive that they can work with this president on. They're too far apart. All they can do is...
They could they could work together on infrastructure. They could work together on infrastructure.
How?
Putting labor to work.
Right, but I mean...
They could do that.
But we spent the money. A bunch of people got it back last Tuesday or Monday, I guess it was.
If we were willing to print more money, they could work together on infrastructure.
Yeah, well, I agree. So I think it would. I mean, you know, unfortunately, you now have a group that wants it as a Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And that's the AOC. But that's not five people. They're, you know, a hell of a lot more than that are signed on to a Green New Deal. And that is anathema to the Trump administration.
It's a
poke in the eye.
Yeah.
And so if they have to get past that, and I don't know if Nancy can get enough of her caucus past that.
You know, it's funny
because you're going to have a block of Republicans that won't touch infrastructure regardless.
It's funny because just 5 years ago when Ryan was the Speaker of the House, the questions were, is the Republican caucus ungovernable? And I think the question that's going to have to emerge now is the Democratic caucus ungovernable? Mm-hmm. And the reason is that the two parties now represent too great of a political spectrum.
But his problem was on things like passing appropriations bills.
Yeah.
And so the Democrats have the thing of, okay, you deliver your members. But the House Republican caucus has a rule. It's called the Hastert rule after former Speaker Denny Hastert, which is nothing would be brought to the floor unless a majority of the House Republican caucus was in agreement. Mm-hmm. The Democrats don't have something like that. So Nancy can actually forge a deal with enough Republicans if she can bring along enough of her own people. And Democrats, I mean, they've kicked a bunch of these, you know, the ethics reform bill, HR 1, and a bunch of issues they've kicked over the Senate. But that's the problem, is they're not going to move in the Senate.
There's this friend of mine who I greatly respect. I have real respect for this woman. But she says to me, man, Trump's going to get impeached. He's not even going to be impeached. His presidency is going to be nullified. Kavanaugh's going to be kicked off the court. Pence won't be, because of the nullification of his presidency, Pence won't be the VP. You know who would be president then? She looks at me, she like licks her lips and she says, Pelosi, how do you like that? And I'm like, hey, that'd be fucking sweet. It's just not, you
not
know,
gonna
it's
happen.
Just not gonna, but I mean, in her, you know, let me tell you, I feel like I can see a fantasy when I can spot a fantasy when I see one, and that's a person who's fantasizing, you know. But people just want to hold on to the little truth that they created for themselves, you know, so hard.
Well, on this Easter weekend, there was a great
another fantasy. There was a
there was a great story.
Let's hear it for the ultimate zombie tale, the tale of Jesus Christ in our hearts.
Oh God, we just opened a big old can of whoop ass on that one.
Yeah.
A quick final note on the president. So, and impeachment. I just heard before I left my place to come over here that George Conway, the husband of Kellyanne Conway, the governor's strategic advisor. So George Conway, conservative, solid GOP attorney. He actually today, for the first time, he's criticized the president before, but for the first time today, he said the president needs to be impeached right now.
That's so funny.
Can you imagine, like, if your wife calling for like your boss to be fired publicly on Easter weekend, you know? I'm sure they're gonna have a fun one around that ham.
If we spend any more time here, Haley's gonna be calling for your impeachment.
Exactly.
Last one, Pelosi throws shade at AOC. I think we covered this already.
Yeah, we did.
She just had to, I think, publicly flog her.
Honestly. I think it helps. It helps Nancy.
Yeah.
And it helps AOC. It's we're talking about mutually assured destruction. There's mutually assured benefits too.
You know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, right?
There is. Mr. Hunter is frequently finding that.
Yeah.
Are we going to take ourselves out with some more music?
Yeah, here, let's bring it back to
California Love.
Let's see here.
We found a pretty funny version for those that haven't seen it. It was a little too sensitive because of the homeless issues we've got right now, but there's a pretty funny version of California Love by South Park that you can find on YouTube. But we weren't crazy about some of the phrases in it, but you can't ever not like Cartman singing.
That's a wrap.